Radio, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
It's a Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and I have something I want to make sure I read, which I believe is a good sentiment from a revolutionary writer in American history, known around the world. He's probably the best known writer, American writer in the world. His name was Jack London. There's a movie now being produced, Call of the Wild, one of his books that wherever you travel in the world, that book is known. Jack wrote, I would rather be ashes than dust. I would rather that my spark would burn out in a brilliant blaze than it should be stifled by dry rot. I would rather be a superb meteor, every atom of me in magnificent glow, than a sleepy and permanent planet. It's a proper function of mankind is to live, not to exist. I shall not waste my days in trying to prolong them. I shall use my time. And that's Jack London, who wrote a lot of really terrific revolutionary stories and fought for socialism, did it from soapboxes in American cities, arrested several times, and became the first. This is the irony of capitalist society. He became the first writer in American history, it's probably the world, to make $1 million from his writing. He still kept signing all of his letters, Yours for the Revolution. Very flawed figure. Gives me a chance to mention that he was part of Coxey's army, which was people who had lost their jobs in a depression and facing all kinds of calamities, such as people are looking down the barrel of now. And Coxey's army was a March on Washington concept, and they were gathering people across the country. They literally went from, you know, different cities, clear from the West Coast. Jack was one of them. He ended up in jail in Buffalo. And of course there was the bonus march of, I think it was 1932, when thousands of U.S. World War I veterans went to Washington because of they were experiencing depression. They had been promised a bonus, but it wouldn't be available to them for many years. And someone had the bright idea to say, look, give us the money now, because we may not make it to that time when the bonus comes due. So they marched to Washington, and they were there in July, actually, very close to, we're coming up to the date, actually. It was July 28th, 1932, and the march was broken up. And I shouldn't call it a march. They had built a camp. There are people who like to talk about, they love to discuss problems overseas, 10,000 miles from America, and say, oh, that's too bad. Look how they're treating people. You know, we don't do that. Well, okay, you did it all right. What happened was the Attorney General ordered the camp to be dispersed, and they, of course, people were standing on their rights, the right to protest and petition, and that's America's First Amendment. And the army was called out, and tanks were used, and live fire. Two veterans, army veterans in World War I, were shot and killed. The leader of the effort to impose the will of the Attorney General was, the man commanding was Douglas MacArthur. And also standing around with his hands in his pockets was Dwight Eisenhower. They used the army on poor Americans who were asking that they get receive the bonus that they'd been promised, since they were veterans, war veterans, and they were down on and out, and the economy was kind of like the one we have now, gone to pieces, and they were beaten to pieces. Their camp was torn up. There were women and children kicked around. And MacArthur did what generals know how to do. He cleared the place. Tanks were used. For those people who would like to get their handkerchiefs out and talk about things that they don't know anything about, the Tiananmen business in China. There's a famous photograph. It's reprinted all the time of a young Chinese man standing in front of a tank. And they say, oh, now doesn't that tell you the whole all you need to know? Well, not quite. It does. They failed to mention that the tank didn't do anything to the men in front of it. And when the tank actually did something which his armies don't do, turned to go around, the young man ran and stood in front of the tank. Please look it up. Get it on YouTube. It's actually a very interesting moment. There's a row of tanks, and this guy's standing in front. And so when the tank goes to the right, he runs and stands in front of it. So the tank turns to go to the left. He runs and stands in front of it. So then the tank sits still, and he climbs up on the tank and talks to, I guess, the tank driver. And then he climbs down and stands again. And then eventually, two guys come by and escort him away. They're not, they don't have weapons. They don't have a gas mask. They don't have a truncheon. They don't have a spear. They don't have a net. They don't have all this stuff that our ordinary policeman has in his trunk. Anyway, that's what happened. But the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, CBC love to give you the still shot. He's standing still, the tank's standing still. The story is the tank didn't do anything to him. Nothing happened. Let me take you back to General MacArthur. Something happened. Tanks were used. The tents were broken up and smashed. People were shot. 1932. Greatest democracy ever, the greatest country. Blah, blah. Don't laugh, it's the boss. There's a t-shirt that people sometimes buy where one partner wears the shirt, and on the back of the shirt, they're walking along with their partner, on the back of the shirt it says, I'm with stupid. Well, Canada is with stupid. Whatever they say, whatever the U.S. says about somebody, now we say it. Even though we say, oh, you know, we have our own position. No, we don't. We're going to have Bob Rae now. He's going to run off the United Nations. And if there's ever been a guy who's going to say, I second that motion, it's going to be him. Because he has lectured Sri Lanka. He has lectured Myanmar. He has quit the NDP saying socialism doesn't work. He criticized people for being too friendly to the Palestinians. I mean, this guy is absolutely designed to carry the ball. And he will, of course, have his cute little remarks, but he's going to do what Trump wants. And if it's not Trump, he's going to do what Biden wants. Because we're moving into the situation where we have a five-eyes system. And we have, whether anybody likes it or not, the five are white Anglo-Saxon Protestant countries. They are the British Empire, plus the Americans, who, by the way, they're kind of a tag team. The Americans and British have been helping each other for as long as anybody can remember. It's a tag team. And Canada is a member. And so when people say, oh, Trump is so gross. Yeah, he might be gross, but you do what he tells you, so I wouldn't be bragging about it or make any big thing about how you're different. There's no difference at all. And particularly, it's getting ugly. We have a situation which should be pointed out. We do it on the Taylor boat a lot, and we're gonna have to do it more, everybody. We have a situation where, according to the data, 43% of Asian Canadians experience attacks of one type or another, verbal, whatever, discrimination. I get this from the Toronto Star. If you can't trust the Toronto Star, I mean, who can you trust? 43% of Chinese Canadians have experienced threats or intimidation, and 8% have been frequently attacked by strangers. So here we are, moving into a situation where our leaders speak recklessly. This is not a time to be talking recklessly. We haven't had any parliamentary debate about China. The NDP and Liberals and Conservatives are all on the same page. They have to find something bad to say about China. They're like the Globe and Mail. It's something I hope everyone has noticed, any listeners would notice, and that is that there's a thing called the Republican Playbook on China. 43 pages, check it out. You can find it at Politico, various other places. 43 pages. I probably said 43 because I said something. I think it's closer to 50 pages. Anyhow, look it up. It's a long thing written by the Republican strategist. The reason I mention it is that I notice that the Conservative Party of Canada seems to be talking like they read the Republican playbook, because the strategy is very simple. Simply blame China for everything. Whatever it is, blame them. And of course, smear them. Just say whatever you want. And once this thing gets rolling, all mud sticks. It doesn't really matter what you're doing anymore. Recently, there was an individual who was quoted in the Wall Street Journal, and he was quoted all over the place. His name is Zenz. He's a German. I'm not implying anything. A German scholar, that he's called, who has written reports about Western China, in which he is arguing that there's some type of, he says, genocide taking place. And when they quote this, he's always described, the Wall Street Journal said he's a data diver. He's a data diver. Well, he's a data diver who wrote a book, and it's called Worthy to Escape: Why All Believers Will Not Be Raptured Before the Tribulation, which I think is probably Pompeo, Secretary of State Pompeo's favorite book, because as you know, he's going to be one of the raptured, or he plays for the raptured or whatever. But anyhow, Worthy to Escape: Why All Believers Will Not Be Raptured Before the Tribulation. Pretty important book. These people who are calling him a data diver and an authority on a remote area of China, Western China, he says there's genocide of the Uyghurs. And that's printed by the Washington Post. As I said, all mud sticks. Once you get into the mud department, it's kind of like a snowball fight, right, or a mud fight. People don't even care. They just pick it up and throw it. So he has this, he doesn't even bother with basic data. I want him to, anybody out there who falls for this junk, listen, in 40 years, the past 40 years, the Uyghur population of China has grown from 5.5 million people to 11.5 million people in 40 years, double the population. So, but we're listening to this bird, and he gets quoted by the Wall Street Journal, because who cares? This is, we've reached whatever is the way this, I mean, I'm sure that that's whatever is in Bob Ray's wall. It's Adrian Zenz, and he gets treated like he knows something, which tells you that nobody in our culture knows a thing. that a clown like this gets away with this. But you see, we're in this mode. It's a hate mode, and therefore anything said is okay. Sorry. Go ahead and say it. And it does have consequences. 43% of Asian Canadians end up threatened. And we haven't even had a parliamentary discussion. Nobody's explained to us why we're in this mode. You know, there was never been an agreement here. The decision was taken in Washington to pivot towards China, a country that is already surrounded by U.S. military bases. Chinese military bases, just in case you didn't notice, I'll have you share this little bit of information. There are no Chinese military bases surrounding the United States. Not even Canada, the island of Canada. No, we're not surrounded by Chinese military bases. But if you read the talking points produced by the Republicans and restated by morons in the Conservative Party and other morons in the Liberal Party, you would think that China was a great menace. And the United States says we're number one, and we're going to stay number one, and nobody else can touch us, and we have the biggest, baddest, blah, blah. And China says, actually, we don't believe in that stuff, so we don't claim to be number one. We don't believe there should be a number one. This is the Taylor Report, so you hear stuff like this. This is kept to, you will not be get this information elsewhere. They say, we believe there should be a multilateral world without a number one, and we'll all get along fine if we abide by international law, nations treat each other with respect, and you don't play games like dirty sanction games, which the United States does, Canada follows suit, NATO follows suit, that goes forward. That's the poison. And it's coming from here. And now we believe the Five Eyes and NATO all believe in the old model of world hegemony for the so-called superior states. As you know, we spoke to Eve Engler about it. Brian Mulroney says, we're civilized. I got news for him. The Chinese are civilized. There's far more civilized than you, Mr. Mulroney. Far more. And they've been through more, too. They were occupied by the Germans, occupied by the Japanese, occupied by the British, occupied by the French, occupied by the Americans. For 100 years, more than 100 years, under the British, who forced opium on their people. But they got back on their feet. Now they seem to be doing okay. They say they don't want any trouble with anybody. But you talk about yourself as civilized. There's something very, very apropos that comes up, and I want to make sure that our listeners are aware. China points out that there seems to be a zealotry about interfering in their internal affairs. And it's reached this kind of point. Saturday, July 23rd, July 11th, boy, July 11, A5 of the Toronto Star headline. McLaughlin urged to resign from Hong Kong court. And it says, national security law effectively removes former Chief Justice's independent authority, former Liberal Justice Minister Kotler says. And I'll give you the first paragraph. Mr. Kotler said, former Liberal Justice Minister Erwin Kotler, a widely respected champion of human rights, full stop, parentheses, asterisk, parentheses, give me a break. The last time I saw Erwin Kotler, he was holding a press conference calling for the removal of Maduro in Venezuela. And he's a humanitarian interventionist, tanks and all. He's a sweet fella. I mean, he's no way in the world widely respected. And many people have had it with him. I refer you to Max Blumenthal's wonderful confrontation with him at a press conference. But anyway, he's former Liberal Justice Minister. He says, former Supreme Court of Canada Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin should consider resigning her seat on Hong Kong's highest appellate court to protest against China's crackdown on the Asian cities' legal freedoms. Now that is really interesting. This is, I would say, that is a bridge too far. And here's the other part of the story that fascinates me. Mr. Kotler said he intends to telephone Ms. McLaughlin to make the case for her to resign and emphasize that Beijing's new national security law removes the independence of the judiciary. Oh, hold on, Kotler, that's your opinion. That is your opinion. There's no finding that I'm aware of that except from you. And as far as I'm concerned, you're the last guy I would ask. And then here's what Kotler says, quotes, she could take the position, I like this word, she could, he's giving her strategic advice. She could take the position that the overbroad, draconian national security legislation would not only compromise the position of an independent appellate court in Hong Kong, but in fact would even exclude them from being able to act at all as an independent court, Mr. Kotler said. All right, here's the funny part. Well, number one, that's grossly meddling in the internal affairs of China, and even of the Hong Kong, which is part of China. This is all states must provide national security. Hong Kong is a part of China, 52 countries. I'm gonna keep messing with the numbers. It is 52 countries around the world, all of them developing countries, and therefore don't meet the standards of Mulroney and Five Eyes. But they are countries, and they are members of the United Nations, but they are being developing countries and former colonies, they're very sensitive to this business of who has sovereignty and respect for sovereignty, which is they fought very hard to achieve, and they are all very suspicious that Five Eyes wants to come and take theirs. So they voted in support of China on its position on Hong Kong, which, by the way, would not interest Irving Kotler at all, since he would love to have them all arrested because they don't match his standards. But at any rate, but here's the deal. It's just one word you don't want to hear when you're talking about judges and trials and cases. Is I'm going to phone the judge. I have to read that again because you notice something? Mr. Kotler said he intends to telephone Ms. McLaughlin. That's Judge McLaughlin to you, bud. She's a sitting judge in the highest court in Hong Kong, Mr. Kotler. The highest court. There are other, by the way, there are really some high-powered, very respected judges there. And Five Eyes is getting nervous about this. They don't like it that judges from their jurisdictions have been there. And I have read Ms. McLaughlin's, I'm sorry, Judge, I just committed. Judge McLaughlin, former Supreme Court Judge of Canada, They have all been saying that, you know, that's an impressive court in Hong Kong. She says they have very high standards, and she has been impressed with them. And you see, she got caught in a problem. The wind shifted, political winds shifted. And you know this rule of law stuff and respect for law and procedure and all that stuff? She's a living embodiment of it. She's doing her job. Now, this politician, the former attorney general, he says he's going to phone her. And they turn her into Ms. McLaughlin. She's a sitting judge. And he said, she could say, what's he gonna do? What's he got? A couple of talking points he's gonna offer her? This is embarrassing to the highest degree, in my opinion. And it is demonstration, exhibit A, of gross interference in the internal affairs of China. And it is actually improper, in my opinion, for a former attorney general, a high-powered politician in Canada, who is carrying an axe against China. He isn't a member, he's not of the liberal wing of the party that says, really, we ought to be trying to make nice with China, because after all, it was Trump's idea to arrest Meng Wanzhou. It wasn't the Canadian's idea. It was Trump's idea, and we did it because we do what we're told. So there are liberals, former ambassadors, whatnot, quite a list, who say, look, why don't we just act like a real country and send her home and forget it? I mean, let Trump stew on it. Oh my goodness, no, Erwin Kotler, he's Mr. Battleaxe. He wants to break this whole thing up. So he thinks he can just call, and I guess he can. I hope she says to him, you shouldn't call me, you know. This will destroy, if she were to act on this, this will destroy the court, and it's a good court. The appellate court of Hong Kong has a high standing. They ought to be left alone.